You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Nicole. Welcome all.
Hello.
Yes,
hello. Video.
With video, no. Yes, we're all here-ish, except for Triplett, because
I'm not.
I was lied to that he had a webcam.
It's because I have no face, or else I'd have a video.
We know you have a face. You were on camera last week. So,
oh, yeah.
Sorry, everybody, for Nicole and I guess, being gone. We had to watch Super Bowl.
We had to attend a funeral.
Yeah. Basically. It didn't go well for us. But hey, 1 year, we've
Yay!
Been here a year. Yes.
So it's
our 1 year anniversary show, which basically we'll just mention and that's it. Not really.
Yeah. it's time for a hologram cover for the podcast.
It is. This is when we do the full hologram cover with, like between 5 issues of Spider-Man. I have like 2 or 3 of those. Why? I don't
well,
know.
But we'll reboot to number 1 next month.
That's right. We go back to number 1. And
but then we'll count up the episodes, and it'll be issue 100 in about 5 months' time.
One of us will probably die in the next episode.
Yes.
I
or
just
maybe.
Got here. I guess I'm the red shirt then.
I do have a big announcement. I talked about this yesterday. I want to thank everybody that's here today that tuned in yesterday to our big Toy Fair event. There's lots of cool stuff out there. You can download yesterday's show. All 4 hours and 45 minutes of our insanely talking about toys.
Also on YouTube.
And it's on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
So check that out. So there's some Marvel figures that came out, DC stuff, a lot of stuff for like Green Lantern movie, things like that. So.
And boy, did those Green Lantern toys suck.
Yeah, but but anyway, we'll have a big announcement. It's going to be at the end of this show, though, so you got to listen to the whole show before you get the big announcement. For I think we've already said it's going to be an interview, but we'll talk about it once we get to the end of the show. And I don't think Nicole even knows yet. I forgot to tell Nicole before the show, so it's going to be a great surprise for her and not for the rest of us.
So stick around, folks.
You can see my surprise.
All right, let's get into. I know. It'll be just like that. News. So everybody made fun of us for watching the Super Bowl, but we got to watch the trailers and stuff. So what trailers did we see, McFeely?
Well, we saw Thor. I'm bringing it up first because we probably didn't really have much to add to that. Because it really seems like that 5-minute trailer that came out of Comic-Con last year just kind of blew all the pre-footage they have to show us before the film. Because every trailer hasn't really contained much in addition to that. I think we saw a shot of a frost giant roaring in this one.
Yeah, that may have been
about
it. And it seemed like there was one part that was like an additional bit of business between Thor and the Doctor. I can't remember the character.
Natalie Portman. Jane Foster.
Jane Foster, thank you. Apparently I don't read Thor. But that was that was about it. And there's nothing that really swayed me. One way or the other.
Yeah, but it's not like you need swaying.
No.
Right. Yeah, I'm ready for Thor. Oh, I'm ready for Thor.
Yeah, but it's mostly for, you know, the casual fan that just likes to go out to movies. It's kind of the announcement, hey, it's up and running. So, you know, of course we're going to know about it. But
yeah, that's true. We're biased.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
I mean, some people I know, that was the first time that they saw the trailers, so.
What were their reactions?
I think most people were more excited for Cowboys and Aliens and mostly any of them. So
I haven't even bothered watching that trailer yet.
Yeah, and the Pirates one.
Wow.
Because there's been a lot of talk about the Pirates one, and we finally got to see something about it. So besides,
I haven't watched that either. So. Doing badly.
More
importantly,
fanboy my butt. Whatever.
Captain America was the one that we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this was the new. This is the first ever Captain America trailer. And that was pretty freaking awesome, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I thought,
I
was... I was especially impressed with like the origin sequence where it was, I mean, the sort of CG work that they did to make him look like the scrawny pre-Super Soldier version of Steve Rogers was pretty incredible.
Definitely. Every shot I see of him in the role convinces me more and more that, I mean, I think everybody was a little bit unsure about that whenever he was announced. Chris Evans was announced being in the role, but every image just sells it a little more and more, I think, every time I see that. And that scrawny guy stepping in there and then ripped coming out of it, definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, Red Skull.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it was a half second, and you really needed to pause it to be able to see it properly, but totally crap.
Apple trailers, frame by frame, is my friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was doing like... He was off a mask in it as well, so obviously they're going the actual disfigured Red Skull route instead of the wearing a mask route. Because he's been both in the comics in history. Originally it was just a mask. Later he got disfigured, but they're obviously starting out disfigured. And I didn't even notice it when I watched the trailer the first time. I was rewatching it with my brother, and he was squinting at the background and everything. But you can even see some of the Howling Commandos in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Dum Dum Dugan's in there, and Pinky Pinkerton as well.
Oh, I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah. So are they going to try to work Nick Fury into it and do something with that, you think?
I'm thinking they're probably not.
I think they should.
Well, I don't disagree, but they're probably just going to not try and confuse people with the whole immortality formula thing. I mean, they're probably going to do more like what the Avengers cartoon has done, where it was Nick Fury's dad or granddad was in the war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they try to have it like a succession or something.
Mm-hmm.
Connected, but not really. Yeah, and I think that's probably more palatable. I mean, it's one of those deals where it's like they have to be really careful about how much mythos they layer on when they're already going to be throwing in... what, four characters plus into the Avengers film. And they've got to keep it somewhat grounded. I mean, they're throwing in a mystical character with Thor, but they're kind of saying that that's other dimensional science and not necessarily magic. So that makes it, I guess, a little more believable. So, but if you start throwing in infinity formulas and things like that, I think that you start to stretch it for...
You just have to know how far you can go.
Yeah. So
I believe Howard Stark is supposed to be in the film as well, so they're already bridging the universe with that, and then we've got the Cosmic Cube tying in with Thor. So, you know, that's enough continuity to be throwing at people before you even start talking about secret formulas that keep Nick Fury alive from the war.
Yes.
I mean, that's something that only exists in comics, so you can still have Nick Fury around. Which you need to do because of the sliding time scale. You don't need to have that whenever you're reinventing the timeline from the ground up.
Right. Yeah, you can just say whatever. Especially because there's no previous era. Yeah, exactly. So,
I mean, we're basically getting Ultimate Avengers anyway, is what I'm assuming we're getting. So that he wasn't even in like Ultimates back in World War II, was he? I don't remember seeing him in... I don't remember seeing him in the Cap issue, like, you know, where they showed was it the first issue of Ultimates or something? I can't remember.
It might not have been at World War II. There was a miniseries Ultimate Mystery, which came out shortly before the Ultimate Power thing, which did reveal that Nick Fury was experimented on and that it extended his lifespan, but I don't remember if it was World War II or if it was another war that he was in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other trailer.
Yeah, it wasn't a Super Bowl trailer, but we also saw the X-Men First Class trailer this week.
You know, and
what happened there?
Yeah, because here's the deal. We've been talking about it on this show for the last couple of months, and we're like, oh, man, look at these pictures of this crap. You know, oh, they're going with the blue and gold. That's kind of weird. And, you know, there hasn't been much press, and it's coming out June 3rd, and we're like, wow. Yeah. So then this trailer comes out, and it's awesome.
Yeah, actually half decent. Shocker.
Yeah. Like, I'm sitting...
It must have done something correct, because it wasn't supposed to come out till Thanksgiving. They upped it.
See, I thought it was supposed to be later, but I mean,
it was a winter release, all right, yeah.
Yep.
But they're coming in the summer.
Put it out amongst all the hype of the other superhero films that are out this summer. It's a very superhero-centric summer this year.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be broke. But it's a great trailer. Not that I'm not broke already. But it's a great trailer. I mean, I'm like, I pull it up on the TV to show my wife, and she's like, oh, that looks good. I'd watch that. I'm like, I know!
What? Seriously, where did they go right?
So,
producer style.
Yeah, so I want to see it. So, yeah, so that's
huge. I mean, let's not let me know. It may yet suck, but...
It looks pretty, right?
Like, yes. It's got a lot of things going on. Come on. Magneto, submarine. Come on.
Yeah.
That's
some cool stuff in there.
Amazing stuff. Cerebro. I mean, it looks like they're – and they're really – you know, there had been – well, they've got Azrael and Mystique, and so maybe some pre-Nightcrawler. I mean, it looks
like – That'd be cool. That'd be cool.
They're doing a lot of work.
I could figure they'd be putting Azrael into a film like –
But it seems like they're doing a decent amount of work to say that this is the world before the other films that we have. So,
aside from being set in the 60s.
Which seems a little early, but I guess for the context of the film, that's not... I mean,
for the context of the thing, but I mean... you know, the X-Men movies are set in the near future. They're not even set when they were released, you know?
Yeah, that's fair enough. But is near future now?
Well, that's still 50 years, you know.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, I don't know how old Ian McKellen is off the top of my head, but I'm not sure if he was old enough to be that old in the 60s.
So is it the same universe or not? I mean, I know the trailer shows footage from later X-Men movies, does it have to be in the same universe?
I don't know. I've heard a lot of rumbling back and forth about the continuity of the things. I don't know. Alex Summers is in it, and he's a teenager in the 60s. That makes him 40 years older than his little brother. So.
Yeah, that doesn't
When did the Wolverine movie take place there at the end? Because
the origins.
And Emma Frost is a young girl, and in this it's like the 60s, and she's like, you know.
I think that. I'm pretty sure that they're probably, like, dismissing Wolverine Origins, to be honest. But even if they're not dismissing the whole film, I think they sort of decided to get rid of the idea that that was Emma Frost in that, even while making that film.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the ads said she was Emma Frost, but even in the film, even in the credits of the film, she's only listed as Silver Fox's sister, you know?
It's not Emma Frost, even though she does turn into diamonds at one point.
Yeah,
and will anyone give a damn about this movie?
I hope so.
I mean, I want to see it, but I mean, does general audiences want to see it? Like, when you see that trailer, we see it and we think, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, look at that. He's stopping missiles. He's Magneto, and there's submarines and all this crap. And then general audience is like, why isn't Wolverine in this? Wolverine's an X-Men. Why do I want to see this?
I was going to say the lack of naked Hugh Jackman buttocks are sure to diminish the TV.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a
detractor. There's other eye candy out there, so you don't have to worry about the girls not going to see it.
So.
Girls like their superheroes just as much as the guys. We're just not as vocal about it. So.
I think this movie will be good, but I'm going to just say in advance, I think it's going to be a bomb.
Oh.
Yes, I definitely think out of the superhero films we're getting this year, this will be dead last.
It'll be forgotten. I bet people won't even. I mean, it may do okay, but I bet it won't do nowhere near as good as anything else coming out this summer.
I don't think they spent a lot on it, so that's probably.
I just think a lot of people already know what X-Men is about, and so they think this is just another X-Men movie. If they had a choice, most people want to go see something new. Than see another sequel or prequel. I mean, that's the biggest complaint about Hollywood these days is that Hollywood's not got any original ideas. It's all sequels and prequels. So, yeah, people are going to go see Captain America and Thor before they see X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, all the other ones this summer are new things as well. This is the fifth X-Men movie, and then we've got three brand new franchises. I mean, I predict, and it may just be my personal biases, but I predict Thor and then Green Lantern, then Captain America, then X-Men. Probably be the rate of success on those.
Yeah.
Sounds
that's
about
my
right.
Prediction.
Yeah. Yep.
Calling that now. We'll see how it goes.
All right. So, there was actually a bit of comic book news.
Yes.
Other than trailer
movies yet. Yes. This is, well, basically, I'll just launch into it. This month is the last issue of Fantastic Four. Next month is the first issue of the mysterious new FF. And we find out what FF stands for this week. Now, I'm still unclear on whether or not the comic will be released with the title of just FF, or if it will actually carry the full name. I'm unclear on whether or not they've just hidden the title for the solicitations and if it'll change or what the approach is. But FF stands for Future Foundation. And the big news is that the new person joining the team is Spider-Man.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they also got white costumes now.
Yes, new costumes for the foundation.
Even Spidey got a new costume.
Well, he gets a new costume every other week now.
Yeah, apparently.
Do you think we need another Spider-Man? I mean, this seems like he's out in a lot of comics as it is. Do you think we need him in another comic?
Well, he's on two Avengers teams at the minute. So the idea of him being on another team is sure to draw some Wolverine-like comments about too many teams and for a quintessential loner hero, he's on an awful lot of teams, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm really hyped up for this, frankly, because this is the one that makes sense above everything. And, I mean, Spider-Man has had a long and storied history with the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four was the team Spider-Man tried to join in his first issue to try and make some money from being a superhero. And we just had Christos Gage's Spider-Man Fantastic Four miniseries just charting the closeness he's had with the Fantastic Four. He is a very natural choice. The idea, there's enough in the idea to sell it alone. But
his relationship with Johnny, too, I mean, that's basically his best friend as far as superheroes are concerned.
We'll be seeing more on how it's going to impact on Spidey in the next Fantastic Four, and there's another issue of Amazing coming up as well. It's going to be dealing with it as well. I remember Dan Slott saying on Twitter a little while ago he'd read a script for another comic, and there was a note on it that said, "We'll have to coordinate this with Dan Slott." And he was just squeeing over the nature of a shared universe and how books interrelate like that. But I'm assuming at this point that this is what he was talking about.
Yeah.
But more to the point, as I thought more about this, I started to realize that this isn't, it's not just Spider-Man joins the Fantastic Four, much as that's what it's being marketed as because, you know, that's a headline. It's not truly what it is, because this isn't the Fantastic Four anymore. This is the Future Foundation now.
Mm-hmm.
And the covers to this show us the whole Foundation. You've got Franklin and Valeria, Dragon Man, the Molloy Children, Alex Power, Bentley 32. They're all in there. They're all wearing the costumes. This book is about the Foundation now. And if you haven't been reading Hickman's Fantastic Four, the Future Foundation is a new think tank that Reed Richards has put together, tired of his contemporaries in the scientific community's unwillingness to look forward and explore new and exciting ways to face the future. They're afraid and seeking to just stave off the future and keep things as they are. And so he started up this Future Foundation for all these young children that the Fantastic Four have crossed paths with in recent stories, where he wants to just use their imagination and their hope for the future to try and build something new and wonderful. And the more I think about it, the more it was what I realized that this isn't just Spider-Man joins the Fantastic Four. This is Marvel's original child genius, Peter Parker, joins the Future Foundation.
This is what
this is, you know. And, where, you know, there's enough precedent and interest in the sheer concept of Spidey joining the Fantastic Four to sell the idea on its own. But there's this whole other layer to it that I can't imagine. I mean, it's not like they've come out and said this is what it's about, but I can't imagine that this is anything other than the approach that's going to be taken with this. And the more I think about it, and just the sheer level of trust I put in Hickman to do it right, I can't wait for this.
Yeah. I mean, if you take it from the concept, and I know some people are still taking it, you know, from, oh, they just killed off one of the Fantastic Four, and now they're going to put somebody else in there. But it's like I said, it's not the Fantastic Four. This is the Future Foundation. This is something else. It won't be the Fantastic Four until next year. sorry, I had to get that in there. I have hope for Hickman. I think most of us here are fans of what he's done as far as the Fantastic Four. So we'll see. Awesome, awesome. Okay. Well, it is that time. That time to do reviews.
Yay!
Yay! So, Triplet, what you got?
Read some comic books. Did you guys read some comic books?
I did read. $24 I spent at my shop.
I
blame McFeely.
Yeah, but you know what? Despite that, it was a week where we did not get, like, three Avengers titles all at the same time.
No!
Yeah, like, so we are thankful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to two different comic shops this week, so.
Ow.
Yeah, I know.
That's dedication, folks.
But yeah, some good stuff came out this week. I'll talk about New Avengers and Ultimate Spider-Man. But before I do that, just let me hit on Superman 7/8 real quick. I've not been a fan of this stuff, and I'm not hiding that. I think I've been very vocal about how I've not been enjoying Superman lately.
I'm not a fan of any of that stuff.
And I know. But what's neat about this issue, because I haven't been reading it. I've been buying the book, and I've just been kind of thumbing it, and it hasn't been good. But this issue, it seems like there's a lot of neat stuff that could make for, like, a really awesome sort of a Straczynski story that we're never going to get. It's kind of like they're teasing an awesome Straczynski story that's not going to happen. Because at the end of the last issue, 707, these four or five characters show up. Well, Superman is still walking around, not flying, not walking, not fighting Brainiac or anybody. And these characters that are all looking like different versions of a Superman, like you know, there's like a girl and actually two girls, one with a mask, a very young boy, a black man that has a Superman costume on, and you find out that these are characters from a future. And apparently there is, and it kind of goes back to that, I kind of got flashbacks to that first issue of Fantastic Four that Hickman did, where you basically had the reads from the different dimensions. You know what I'm talking about? Except for this is like Superman from like different timelines.
This reminded me of the Dynasty of Superman from All-Star Superman.
To the extent that
it was like, what the hell? This is just the Dynasty of Superman.
Yeah, I mean, there's like all this kind of crap. And there's like lots of neat stuff that they talk about in here and stuff where it's like, wow, that would be kind of interesting. Look, there is a gorilla Superman. I would like to read a story about that. Find out what's going on. You know what? Never going to get that story. I mean, there's even one, like, a dude called Super Batman, who basically is he's half Superman, half Batman. He's got a Batman mask and a Superman and a bat symbol on his chest. And there's all these just kind of wacky Superman characters from different timelines, and we're never going to get that story. But you know what happens? He goes back to walking at the end of the issue. Yeah. I'm spoiling it for you, but that's what happens. But the only reason
I bring
it up,
he just needs some good cardio, and that's what he's doing it for.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, the point of it is they were trying to explain to him how important he was, of course, because you know if you don't you get out of your rut, this possible future where all these Superman are working together to save the timelines will never exist or some bull crap like that. But you know, the reason that I mentioned the issue is because I think there was a question a while back as to Straczynski's other book, Wonder Woman, he was working on, as to whether or not that was taking place in the regular DC universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't too sure about that, right? We find out in this issue of Superman because Wonder Woman guest stars.
Mm-hmm. And
we find out that all the stuff that's happened to Wonder Woman is happening in the regular DC universe, except for Superman has no idea who she is.
Nobody has any idea who she is.
So I guess it's all – I mean, that's like the first time I've seen her like pop up in a book that wasn't her book since the changes happened. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been reading other
– Well, didn't – that happened in – the same thing within –
They dumped them in this stuff in Gen Lost.
Okay. Yeah, where they – nobody in there – like a couple people in there didn't know who she was. Because that was the whole deal because – when Maxwell – somehow the implication has been that when Max changed – his death, maybe he changed something else, but it seems larger than that because other people don't remember who she is either.
Well, yeah, there's not supposed to be anything to do with Max. I don't think that's the
important. Yeah, it's like a separate deal.
That just changed.
Is this leading into Flashpoint? I don't know. I'm just like
I don't think deliberately. I think they're going to twist it.
Yeah, well, this issue doesn't mention anything to do with Flashpoint, so.
But it seems like a lot of comics are conversing in that direction, though, in odd and interesting way. I mean, like I said, Jen Lost doesn't really say anything about Flashpoint, and yet it seems to have implications that it's leading in that direction as well. And we're getting more stuff on Flashpoint. Didn't we get actually some more teaser stuff or news this week? I mean, other than obviously there's a Flashpoint comic that I'll talk about later, but
just in a couple of sentences, I think nothing.
We saw some Flashpoint. There's Flashpoint action figures.
Yes,
I think that counts.
Oh, yes.
And the Jurgens, it's not a cover, but it looks like maybe a cover image or something for Booster that's coming up that has, like, vertical lines, and one of them is, like, Cyborg with, like, the American flag behind him, and you see the Bruce Wayne with the Wayne Casino, and, like, Wonder Woman in her, like, princess warrior outfit. Am I talking Chinese? Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
No, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Okay, so...
that was also in the action figures, because I think like they had the Batman from the from that story, and then they had the Wonder Woman in the armor, and then they had a Flash, and it looked just like the Flash. Wow.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the Flash doesn't look any different. But
yeah.
So anyway, okay, awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't want to waste any more time on Superman, because you know, it still sucks, and I wish that they would get somewhere so that it was good again, because Superman's pretty cool, despite what JD thinks.
Thanks. Yeah. Because we all know that I hate Superman.
Okay. On to some better comics. I'll talk about some New Avengers number 9.
Woo-hoo.
Did any of you guys read that?
Yes, sir. Yes, indeed.
It was okay. I mean... We've lost Stuart Immonen. He's not doing the art anymore.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But we did get something I thought was pretty good. We got Deodato. And we got something I'd never expected in New Avengers. Howard Chaykin. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Howard Chaykin pops up everywhere these days. He's so random and nice.
Yeah, but I don't think I've seen anything from him since they did the Hawkman book and they changed it to Hawk Girl. And then, like, he started doing the art for it. And he might have been writing it, too, because I picked up a couple issues in that. But since then, I haven't seen him doing anything. But I thought it was kind of neat. But they do the whole deal where in the story, it basically the issue starts off in Cuba in 1959. And it's a kind of a story about Nick Fury. And it looks like he's he's hunting down Nazis is what it looks like.
Yeah, like war criminals or something.
Yeah.
No, these are the Chaykin pages.
Yeah, those are the Howard Chaykin pages. And then basically what happens is when it starts off and it's in Cuba in 1959, all that stuff is Chaykin, all the stuff with Nick Fury in the 50s. And then like the present day New Avengers, it becomes pages by Deodato. And I like it when they do stuff like that. I think that's cool, switching up the artist on you.
Yeah, especially for different sequences like that.
Yeah, if they can do it for story reasons instead of just this guy drew this page because this guy didn't have time.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
They pick it up. Is it wrong that I always get a little bit worried whenever I see some kind of new flashback sequence about Nick Fury, given all of the stuff that happens with Nick Fury over in Secret Warriors? I mean, that actively inhibited my enjoyment of Secret Avengers because I spent the whole first 4 issues worrying about the fact Nick Fury appeared to be evil.
Yeah, I mean, the cover of the issue made me think, oh, okay, he's targeting the Avengers on this cover of New Avengers number 9. What in the hell's going on? Is that the Max Fury?
The cover may not occur with an issue.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that, I thought, did they mislabel the issue? Is this actually Secret Avengers? You know, because of the whole stuff with Max going on in Secret.
You know, I actually had that moment for a second. Like, when I was picking it up, like, it was in my box, and I was like, why do I have New Avengers? I'm like, oh, it's... Secrets? Is it? Oh, whoa. Okay. No, this is what I want.
I mean, it came out like, together. That you know, you kind of get confused a little bit. But yeah, like I said, it starts off in the 50s in the within Cuba, and Nick Fury's hunting some Nazis, and there's a really awesome scene where they're trying to run him down with a car, and Nick doesn't jump out of the way or nothing, and he just pulls 2 grenades out of his back. Then jumps to the side and throws the grenades into the car and just blows it to hell.
That was actually awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Smooth.
And these guys are like Nick and let's see, that's Dum Dum too. And who's the other guy?
Yeah, Dum Dum. Not as Gabe Jones, I guess.
They're just black,
so I must have been Gabe Jones.
They're just executing these guys because they caught one, and he's like, you know, he's basically surrendering, and he says, "This is your court of law and your final resting place." He says, "I was only following orders." He says, "Now that's just unoriginal, really."
They ask him, they're like, "Any last words?" And they go through like three or four before.
Yeah.
Triple up.
So yeah, they're just like killing dudes. I mean, I guess they're just still hunt over the war or something. I don't know. It's Nick Fury. He's awesome. So
main body of the issue, not quite as awesome, mind you.
No. Yeah. And then it jumps to the present.
Fight.
Yeah. Yeah, the story's not, like, the best issue. And even, this wouldn't be the issue that I would recommend to people to pick up.
I would say that the art surpasses the story.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a couple of really nice panels. But
love that panel of Satan cracking his knuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Also, like, the foreshot of Strange, Wolverine, Thing, and Spider-Man kind of coming out of the shadow.
Yeah.
There's nice panels in here, but the story is, and then that last page.
They stake out a place, and they attack a place, and they bring back an obscure Mark Gruenwald Captain America villainess from the early 90s.
Yeah, I had no idea who that woman was. I thought maybe she was...
That's
she's maybe Secret Warriors or something. You know, something I'm not reading.
And
that's Gruenwald's Captain America from the early 90s, the Superior Stratagem. She hung around an awful lot. She was obsessed with making warrior women, genetically engineering women, and to be like Amazonian.
She did look a lot like Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Well,
I was thinking, like, Wonder Woman's going to fight them. Awesome. You know.
And Luke Cage, instead of hot wiring a truck, just carries it.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
he's trying to hot wire. He says, "I used to be good at this," and he just gets out and says, "Screw it."
And then a shocking thing ish happens at the end.
Mockingbird is like undercover in the issue. She's not actually fighting with the Avengers. She's kind of like staking out this place. And then whenever the shit hits the fan, everybody's fighting and they're fighting the bad guys and everything. She gets shot.
Really?
Yeah, it looks like she's dead.
Anticlimactically, in a small panel that is one of seven on the rest of the page. Like,
and then you get like Spider-Man like holding her, and he's like, "Oh no!" And I'm like, "What?"
I'm almost gonna be like, "This alien entity killed her in order to show its strength." No, Yar. Okay. It's just kind of very not. Yeah, it's like there's no build up to that moment.
No, it just sort of happens, and I don't believe for a second that it's actually happened. So. I don't know.
Yeah. And then we get that other page of the Nick Fury stuff, which... So they're talking about the Avengers Initiative. So are they tying it more to, like, the movies or something? Is that what they're doing?
Well, that's ripped straight out of the film. And, I don't know what to make of that, frankly, because this is 1959, so the Avengers, as we know them, don't exist yet. So I don't even know what they're going for here at all.
Yeah. And that was New Avengers. It's okay. That's all I can say about it.
The Fury bits were funky, and then there was a sort of moderately amusing thing that happened between them.
Yes.
Yep.
I would classify the weakest issue of New Avengers, from the book that's been the best standard.
Yeah, because even that issue with Luke and Jessica going out on the date, I liked that better. And there was like nothing that happened to the issue. They just fought a Doombot.
Yeah, but there was so much strong dialogue.
Well, yeah, the dialogue was good. The interaction was good, and there's some good stuff in it because of it. Yeah, but moving on, we also read Ultimate Spider-Man number 153. So, did you guys read Ultimate Spidey?
Yeah, I read it.
Nope.
So, what'd you think?
Well, hey, finally, the whole idea of superhero school kicked in 3 issues later.
Yeah.
Just in time for them to start focusing on something else as a story point. The whole death of Spider-Man thing.
The death of Spider-Man. Yeah.
Now, that's supposed to come out in April, right?
I know we've got the gist. I think that's when the first issue of Ultimate Spider-Man that's going to be about the story kicks off, yeah. Because this is the first of three Death of Spider-Man prelude issues, and I know we've got two Ultimate Spider-Man issues this month at least. So I think the story proper starts in April, yeah.
And how long is that supposed to go on for? Is it a small Okay.
But that's a pure guess. Just feels right. Six issues.
Yeah, because that would work for a trade, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, okay, so like Ultimate Spider-Man, this issue starts off with we get to see the Kingpin before, you know, he died years ago is all it says. He goes to Egypt, it looks like. And he finds the, what is it called? The Zodiac Key.
Yes.
That thing that was in his safe in his office that, you know, I guess Mysterio found and Black Cat stole. And was it last issue or has it been a couple issues?
Yeah,
back?
It was last issue. They were saying that this is possession of it was why Kingpin had been able to hold on to his power.
Yeah. And he's basically, you know, he's buying it from this guy that's found it, and the guy gives it to him, and he tells him that it honors the request of its holder. And he asks him, so then why don't you use it? And the guy says, because everything has a price. And so the Kingpin takes it, and he puts it in his hand, looks like he closes his eyes and thinks, and then everybody around him, like, gets destroyed. Like, they get, like you know, melted down to their skeletons, aged in a second, Indiana Jones Last Crusade death, you know. they chose poorly. And so like he sees what it's done, and he says, dear God, he says, no one can have this, no one can ever have this. And then the Kingpin runs away, and then we jump to present day, and we got Spidey you know, meeting with Iron Man because he's doing his superhero and training stuff.
Finally,
yeah.
But I wound up really loving this because after three issues, you're going, well, where is it? Come on. We actually get to it, and it turns out he's got absolutely no idea what to do. I had no idea how to teach him at all.
Yes.
I'm particularly amused with this because I have a customer who is a huge Spider-Man fan, and he's always saying, oh, there's no Spidey this week. And he's been just peeved by this storyline because he's just like, where do they get off telling Spider-Man what he can and can't do? He's accomplished more than any of them. And I haven't actually had the chance to speak to him about this issue yet, but I'm going to be really interested to see what he thinks when it turns out that they actually had no idea what to do to him at all.
Yeah. I like the response that Tony says. He says, listen, my girlfriend made me do this. You know, and they just start talking about it. And just, your girlfriend? Wait, who's your girlfriend? Don't worry about it. You're dating Carol Danvers? Don't worry about it. I'm 16 years old, and even I know that's a bad idea. And yeah, it's basically just awesome dialogue. I mean, it's what Bendis does. You know, he puts together good dialogue between characters and just makes it ridiculous. You know? And that's part of the story. And then the other part, we go back to Black Cat, and we've got that thread that's been going on with her and Mysterio, where Mysterio's just obsessed with getting that key. He just wants it. I'm not, does he even really know what – I mean, does he know what it is? Or is
he just
–
no more than he's letting on.
Because, like, he figured out who she is because, like, he winds up – she's, like, back at her apartment – and he knows that she's Felicia Hardy, and he knows where she lives. He knows basically everything about her, and they just kind of sit and talk about it. And he's trying to convince her to give him the key, and you know she doesn't want to do it. And then eventually, you know, they talk about what it is and what it does, and she starts to looks like she's going to use it or something. Like she's going to concentrate, kind of like Kingpin did back in the Egypt sequence. Then we, of course, you know, switch scenes back to Iron Man and Spider-Man still kind of, you know, screwing around doing their superhero training thing. I call it screwing around because, like, he's not teaching him anything. He just takes him back, you know, to where all his armor's at. And Spidey's just looking at him, and he's like, oh, my God. Okay, this is, like, the coolest thing I've ever seen. And Tony's like, I know, right? And he's just like, can I have one? It says, do you have $700 million? Come on, you have so many. You know? And it's just, you know, again, just like, you know, awesome little dialogue where they're just talking back and forth.
And you have these pages split up, actually, this is like New Avengers as well, where David LaFuente, who's done most of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man so far, he's doing the Spidey and Iron Man scenes. And Sarah Pacelli, who just joined the book a couple of issues ago, is doing the Black Cat and Mysterio scenes.
Yeah. I really like the art on the Black Cat and Mysterio stuff. You know,
I like them both. Pacelli, it's funny because when Pacelli did a full issue on her own, she seemed to lean a little bit more towards emulating LaFuente's style, so it didn't jar too much. But she seems to be coming into her own a little, with a more style of her own in these pages. And yeah, I'm just I look forward to, I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen with the art team on Ultimate Spider-Man, if they're going to keep it like this or what. Because I mean, this is just, this works because of the layout of the story, but I don't know how long they can keep the art divided up like this. But I hope they find somewhere good to put Pacelli if she doesn't stay on the book, because she has come along remarkably, even from my first exposure to her on Runaways.
Yeah, I thought the artwork for the whole book was good, but it's just like the parts with Black Cat and Mysterio is just standing out because of the expression, like, in her face and everything.
It
kind of reminded me of, like, Adam Hughes-ish kind of art, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, so that's because you can practically hear the latex squeaking across her ass.
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That's an image. Okay.
But, you know, like,
very shiny.
We got it.
But the thing switches back to Black Cat Mysterio, and you find out what she did with the key, and it looks like she's basically destroyed her whole building and everything around it. There's, like, looks like dead bodies and everything. And, like, Mysterio is, like, says, "What did you do?" And she says, "I only meant for you. I only meant to get rid of you." And he says, "You don't know what you're doing." And she says, "I didn't mean to." And she's freaking out because, you know, she realizes she just, like, killed all these people and everything. And, like, Mysterio basically tells her, you know, "Give it to me. You're going to kill us all." And so she gives him the key. Right when Spidey and Iron Man actually, you know, catch up with him, try to stop him from getting the key. And then we get that last page of Mysterio, he's got the key, and whatever he's doing with it, it ain't good. So could this lead into the death of Spider-Man? And could that be like what he does with it? Could he, I don't know, say, "Hey, you know, I want Spider-Man dead."
See, I don't really know how much I buy this being a prelude to the actual death thing.
Yeah.
Because this is just a continuation of where the story is going already. This is just part four of the current story. There's nothing about this story that has suddenly changed and made it a prelude. I mean, I think that's just market speak.
Yeah, but he's doing something with it. He's going to rewrite history or do whatever. I don't know what that thing can do. He's holding it, and it's a big old light show going off in the city. I don't know what he's doing with it, but it ain't good.
I'm afraid of no ghost.
Now you bring him. Yeah, but that's Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man. It was pretty good. I liked it.
Next issue is due, I think, week after next.
Awesome.
So Nicole, why don't you go ahead and
okay, like Triplet here, I read a comic book that maybe a lot of people don't read. So I'm going to talk about my favorite. I'm going to talk about Dark Tower. I know you guys don't care for it, but this is a really good one to get into because they don't use a whole lot of what's the King's speech. I know that sounds really weird with the movie coming out, but Stephen King has his own way of writing fantasy, you know, fantasy words. But he doesn't seem to use a lot in this one, so it's an easier read than most of his other ones. Just this is more of a background story of let me start over here. Roland is in a hospital. He's been treated by the doctors. Now, doctors aren't what you think they are. They're little scarab beetles that come and clean him up. It's kind of disgusting if you think about it. And there's another guy that's next to him, and he's telling his story of how he got there and how about his cot head got attacked and the sisters came and saved him, only to use them as him as food, as well as everyone else. So he just tells his backstory. That's basically it. It just sets up backstory and what's going to happen next week. All hell breaks loose. So, like I said, it's a simple read, but I enjoyed it. But what I really want to talk about, what I like to do is go into my comic books and just pick up a random comic that I don't even know about. And I picked up this one. It's called Whisper in the Walls. I would love to know if anyone else has ever heard of this. It's made by a company I've never even heard of. It's by the Humanoids. Again, I like dark comics. So it looks like this is maybe – I couldn't tell you what the original language was, but it looks like it was interpreted from a different language. Basically, this is the first issue out of six. It has to do, if you like history, it deals with World War II and the experiments that the Nazis did on humans. So if you don't like that kind of intense stuff, this is not for you. It's kind of disturbing. They have some a little girl who's our main focus. Her name's Sarah. She's trying to figure out what happened to her family, who took her her family and killed them. Apparently, she found out there's other kids there by – it's called Whispers in the Walls because the kids hide in the walls and to get away from their experimenters. And I'm just going through it because I have to – so – and then she finds out that her family was actually killed by this monster, this experiment that the Nazis did. And each one of these kids are there for a different reason, for an experiment. And that's basically the gist of it. Again, it looks like it's been translated, so it's kind of a hard to understand with the translation. But it's a good setup for the rest of the six. So, like I said, it's hard to discuss it since I don't think anyone's ever even heard of this, but it's a good read. So,
right on.
If you like dark,
you think
if
it
you
was
like
foreign
dark,
originally,
huh?
You think it was foreign originally?
I think it is because of, like I said, it's kind of has some really weird interpretations, and the names on it, Minuso, Tesoro, and Montes are the names of the writer and the artists. So
could be then.
Yeah. Ooh. So, but if you like some, it's kind of disturbing because it shows kind of like what the Nazis did to with their experiments. But, and you don't really know who the good guys are or the bad guys are. But like I said, it's a really good setup for a six issue trade. So if you like dark stuff,
okay,
it's definitely good. I'm
great.
Better with my reviews, but I'm trying. So
yeah, it's good.
So
wow. Okay. So basically, I shouldn't read this before I'm going to bed. Then.
No.
No, it's pretty creepy. Yeah.
It's pretty. It's,
you know, creepy kids will do it for me. Yeah.
Creepy, creepy kids are
whispering ghost children in the walls. No, thank you. No.
Yeah. And you can see like one of the kids. He's been beaten pretty bad. He's got kind of a deformed face. So, yeah, it can be disturbing if you're not into that kind of stuff. So,
okay. No, that's great. All right. So, let's see. I'll go real quick here. First thing I want to talk about is Flash 9, which is on the now road to Flashpoint. Obviously, as we've talked about, Flashpoint is the next thing after Brightest Day, and it seems to be pretty expansive, probably more expansive than Brightest Day has been, since that's been fairly contained. This issue really doesn't – it's on the road, but it's sort of like where the road begins, so there's not a lot that ties in. The first couple of pages are the pages that we've seen in the previews. Most of the story is Barry kind of working with an investigation on the death of a cape, as his boss calls it. And of course,
I've never liked that.
No.
Yeah. For a cop slang term for superheroes.
Yeah.
Never liked it.
Yeah, it's kind of. But I guess that's the thing, you know. You shouldn't like it. I think that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know.
There is a very classic Flash joke at the very beginning, because, of course, Barry's late. And
just like 1930.
Oh, yeah, so. But anyway, they find this guy, and all they know is he has a big E on his chest, and, you know, Barry's trying to, I think the fingerprints were removed. No, he had fingerprints. Anyway, that's a different comic I was reading. Anyway, but Barry does, like, a fingerprint analysis, and he's trying to figure out who he is. In the meantime, he's supposed to be at a family lunch and is basically avoiding doing that for some reason, which Iris can't quite understand. But it's something about – he makes mention that a few issues ago, they were fighting the future rogues or the future – yeah, the future rogues. And
were they called the Renegades?
Renegades, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
And that huge mirror was broken, and part of what Barry saw was his mother age, and the implication is that, and I think it ties back to that Reverse Flash rebirth where he goes back and changes history. The idea is here is that he's altered the actual timeline, what was supposed to be. And so Barry sort of, I think, is realizing or comes to the realization that his mother wasn't supposed to die and that she was supposed to be around. And I think that really troubles him because he knows that that reality at another point actually happened. So there's some consolation to say, well, that, you know, she died and that was what was supposed to happen. But now he knows it's not supposed to. And for someone that sort of has the ability to move through time, I'm sure that's got to be a bit nagging. So that may...
That kind of goes back to the Renegades, too, because remember, the whole point of them is going through time and stopping crimes and them judging Flash by saying, your problem is that you don't go back in time and change anything.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that may be nagging him as well. There's been sort of talk, and I think it even goes back to the other thing that Johns is doing as far as in Green Lantern, talking about how the Flash now doubts himself and doubts some of the things that he does. And so... but of course, so he goes along with the investigation. They end up figuring out that the hero, the person that's dead, is actually the Elongated Kid, and somehow he's rapidly aged and essentially just died of old age. But while Barry's investigating that, this helmeted rider shows up and like breaks through part of the lab, and so Barry goes running after him and. You know, a semi-comical moment is he yells at him to stop, and so the rider gets out of the pier and stops, and he's like, you know, we were moving faster than the speed of sound. What you said never caught up with me. So, so of course, the questioning of who are you, what are you doing, and he makes a comment about how, you know, he's...
He says, you look like a cop.
Yeah, you look like a cop, and he's like, well, I am. And something about saying that they're on the same page, essentially. And Barry's like, well, why would we be on the same page? And the guy takes off his helmet. He's like, well, because my name is Barry Allen. And and there's something about stopping the single greatest.
He says, and I'm here to save history from the single greatest time anomaly to ever threaten reality. Bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum, bum. Which I think plays into pretty much what we knew about Flashpoint anyway. So
yeah.
And hey, so, yeah. We kind of glossed over the fact that Hot Pursuit is Barry Allen.
Yes, which essentially, yeah, I mean, but that's kind of what I was getting at, but yeah.
Yes, but we didn't exactly see that one coming.
No, I don't know who I thought it was, but I don't know that I thought it was him. And
I kept thinking it was going to be that, I thought it was going to be that John Fox or whatever, you know, that Flash from the future, yeah, or something. I kept thinking it was going to be him, because we haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah. It was really a curveball, I have to say. And it's kind of odd that was revealed so quickly. Like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like that was going to be an ongoing sort of mystery for a little bit. And it's like, no, here's even the preview. No, the Flashpoint, here you go. There's the guy that you've been wondering about for the last few months. So
there's not going to be any holding back in the build-up to Flashpoint, obviously. If they feel like they can drop that, something they've been hyping as a mystery in the solicits for so long... If they feel they could drop that, no, it just makes me think, what else is coming?
God, yeah, I mean, this could be a really interesting event. I mean, and like I said, now we know that Booster is going to be involved, so obviously we've got time manipulation going on. This is going to be, I'm excited.
I'm excited. I love time travel, and I love time anomaly and thing in comic, and so I'm excited about, probably more excited about this event than I was a month ago, before some of this stuff came out. So, anyway, on to another comic that I love, that's very near and dear to my heart, that I talk about every couple of weeks and people still don't buy, which is...
Well, it's nearly over now.
It is nearly over.
So I'll get it in the trade. I'll get it in the trade.
That's the excuse. that's what it looks like. So, Generation Lost, we're up to issue 19. So, issue opens up with a sort of flashback moment of Jaime talking to his friends and giving a little bit of history on the Blue Beetle, original Blue Beetle, and then Ted Kord Blue Beetle. And there's a moment, there's a little bit of a sort of a concerning joke that's made by his friends as he's telling the story, which is that the other Blue Beetles died. And wouldn't he be concerned that that could happen? And then they just sort of, they go on. Of course, the story has been going that Max has been experimenting on the Reach technology, trying to get information out of it. And Jaime surmises that maybe Max has been doing this the whole time to get at his armor. And Max is like, good guess, but no. I think that was just sort of a bonus. But he eventually gets left alone, and he starts to get a distress signal out to the rest of the JLI team. And, of course, now Power Girl has become a part of the team. This is sort of the episode, or the issue, rather, where lots of things start to hit the fan. Jaime ends up getting loose and starts fighting with Max. And he's sort of taunting Max because he's been like, look, you've been experimenting on me for, you know, a couple, you know, a week or so now, and you still don't know enough about me and on how to stop me. Starts tearing the place up. The rest of the JLI shows up. It's a lot of fighting in this, except when you get to the very end, because Jaime is eventually like, you know, we caught you with your pants down, and basically Max is like, no, I've still got a few tricks up my sleeve, and I did find one weakness. And just as the JLI shows up, Max pulls out a modified-looking laser pistol and shoots him in the head.
Oh, no!
Yes.
Not another way. What is he trying to do? Max on his belt or something? What the hell?
Yes, it is a beautiful full-page panel of Max, I mean, Reach armor flying, full shot in the head with the last panel of Jaime laying on the ground with, you know, bits of head opened. And
did we have any foreknowledge that this was going to happen?
No. And I sort of feel about this like we talked about with New Avengers, where I don't know if I believe that it is as it appears.
All right. If this really is as it appears, now they got a reason to bring Ted Kord back.
I hate to say it because and this has been a big deal for me. Obviously, again, I'm a big Booster fan, and you know, again with comic characters, it's always not if they're coming back, but when a lot of time. And they've systematically brought back most of the other previously named heroes. I mean, think about, you know, Firestorm, you think about, you know, Ronnie Raymond coming back, you think about Adam, Flash. So, yeah, there is a little bit of Blue Beetle sort of being now the odd man out.
I think I'm editorial love Jaime too much to let him go.
See, and I hope that too, because I like Ted Kord dead. thing for that character to do. I think it's hard for the Booster character to stay as interesting and, you know, moved along if he doesn't have his drinking buddy.
Oh, come on, he needs his drinking buddy.
Yeah.
Come on.
I think he hasn't even appeared in Smallville yet. They can't kill him yet. Also, I really don't think DC can get away with offing another non-white replacement.
No, that's why I say I think there's a bit of smoke and mirrors here. I think that it's you know, a bit for the impact, but just based on the image, if he was shot in the head, there's not enough blood. So I mean, not to say that means anything, but Yeah, I totally think that it was basically more of a glancing shot and not, you know, he's not going to be dead. So he's going to have a serious headache for a couple weeks. But,
what's going to happen is Max Lord
comics.
Max Lord is going to wake up in his bed and he's going, God, I had a crazy nightmare. And
yeah.
Blue Beetle is going to be in the shower.
Yeah, Blue Beetle will be in the shower.
Ted Kord will be in the shower.
Ted Kord will be in the shower. So
what's Blackest Night, Max?
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of combat sequence in this, a lot of fighting. It was a lot of fun for that. And somewhere along the way, they randomly changed Ice's costume, I think, and didn't mention it. So I don't know. But whatever. Anyway, good stuff. I like it. Keep reading it.
It's always good when all hell breaks loose in a comic book.
Yeah, well, I mean, Max has been one step ahead for so much of the series. It was nice to have him sort of off balance.
Yeah, that's definitely a long time overdue.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. I think he got a little too overzealous with experimenting on the Reach Tech and didn't realize its capabilities. And yeah, it is kind of nice to see that. So.
I think this is going to end coinciding with the Wonder Woman story, and Wonder Woman's just going to break his neck again. She's going to remember in the last issue, the last page is his neck cracking.
I remember now. You're a dick.
It's true that Max does feel like somebody who shouldn't be alive. In contrast to nearly everybody else who's come back after Brightest Day, this is speaking of somebody who's only known him as a bad guy before the whole, you know.
Oh my God! He used to be a joke. I mean, good Lord! I remember the stories where like him just doing the stupidest stuff.
Yeah, he was their manager, wasn't he? The JLI's manager, basically.
Yeah, and.
Nothing like he used to be. He's a totally different character now. It's bizarre.
I've only ever known him as the villain. I'm out of chocolate. he doesn't feel like he should be alive, you know? Everyone else who's come back is like, you know, Martian Manhunter, yes. The Hulk, yes. Aquaman, yes. Firestorm, eh. Professor Zoom, okay, you know, same for Captain Boomerang and Hawk. It's not that they feel they should have been back, but it's not like I feel like it's wrong to have them back either. But Max Lord really feels like he should be dead.
I think the thing that I'm waiting for is that somehow at the end of this whole run that Max is going to be right. That, like, the world really does need the JLI and that they're going to do something. I know, it sounds hilarious, but I'm saying, like, I really expect that somehow at the end of this whole Brightest Day sequence, the JLI is going to be the ones that really step in and save the day.
God, what if they become, like, the real Justice League?
Well, I think the question is whether or not this could be an ongoing, you know, after the events of Brightest Day.
Yeah.
It's not like the rest of these characters really have anything else that they're doing, and there's no reason for them to be doing anything else other than being in a JLI. So,
good point.
I think that my hope is that that is what's going to happen. That at the end of it, Max is actually going to turn out to be right. And, you know, we may see a whole sequence where he either goes to jail or, you know, he goes on trial and is either, you know, admonished because the ends justified the means or something. But
I'm wondering if it'll have to end with them killing him in order to break his hold over the world.
Well, and that is a possibility too.
Is there any indication that this could end where Max is actually the good guy?
That's what I'm hoping for, actually. What I'm hoping for. Like, when everything is laid out on the table, that at the end Max will have been right, and it turns out that even though his methodology was a bit extreme, not necessarily any more extreme than some of the methodology Batman has used, nor the Justice League.
I'm pretty sure Batman never shot Wonder Woman in the head.
No, but, you know, they did the whole memory wipe thing, and they'll never live that down. So, but anyway.
Max will have been right, and they'll all go back to being friends. Remember that time you shot the Blue Beetle?
Oh, that was hilarious, wasn't it? Yeah,
oh, I would love to see that.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think that Max is going to be able to be around, but I'm hoping that the rest of the JLI will be a team, and that'll be awesome. So, anyway. So,
believable.
Yes. So, McFeely. There you are, sir.
Okay, what do I got this week? I'm going to start with Osborn, our favorite.
It's a man, one we should subscribe to. Is this another one I should subscribe to?
Yeah, well, it's a mini.
Marvel has really been knocking it out of the park with their villain-based miniseries lately.
Can I just
from Taskmaster to Loki to Osborn.
Can I just say that I was right, that everything's a mini now? Can I say that I called that?
How so?
Well, let's see. This is a mini. The Iron Fist Power Man thing is a mini. How many minis are going on right now?
I don't know. A lot.
Like all the Marvel comics, remember? They're 12 issue.
That's
mini.
What I'm saying. The 12. Yeah.
Well, see, personally, well, I like it better that way. I think you get more. I think you get more of a storyline when it's just a mini series.
Yes, and you get a dollar more per issue.
I know.
Well, nice, to be fair, the price of mini series is dropping across the board. You know, a lot of the newest mini series has only been $3.
Yeah.
Fire Man and Iron Fist only $3.
Is it? Did I only pay $3 for that?
I think so. You should have done. We'll talk about that.
You paid $3.
Yeah. That's why I'm going to get it. I mean, we'll talk about that next week because I'm going to get that next week. We'll talk about it then. This is Osborn number 3 by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios. Emma Rios continues to get, I think she gets better with every passing issue, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And as we left off last issue, this is Osborn, and I think it is now 4 of the, we're down to 3 now. 3 of the 4 previous criminals that were being held, worst of the worst criminals that were being held in this facility with him, have broken out under cover of a riot and are looking to escape. But being buried somewhere beneath the ocean, that's a challenge. And they stride into the middle of the non-powered corner of the prison where full-scale bloody violence is in total effect. And there's an extended, just wince-worthy sequence as Osborn just alpha dogs the place.
Mm-hmm.
Marches up the biggest, nastiest, hairiest, tattooinest guy and just faces off against him and gets punched down and down. He never strikes back. He just lets himself get beaten to within an inch. And as this goes on, like the other characters just run their own bloody hell. Oh, there's this awful, I still haven't remembered any of their names yet, but the female doctor who got the Warren Ellis backup strip in the first issue is just manhandled by this skinheaded giant, and she is smashed. She looks dead. I figured she was dead
because
they killed one of these characters last issue.
Smashed does not describe it, sir.
Blood, things sticking out at funny angles. But then she just stands back up and just everything back to place. But she has designer jeans and designer body parts that she made for herself.
Mm-hmm. That's ultimate designer.
Her blood is laced with a toy. Her blood is laced with poison, and you know, so making her bleed just like releases it into the air, and the guy dies from that. You know, this woman, even though I still haven't managed to remember what her name is, still wound up being immediately the most memorable out of all the other worst of the worst. I mean, that's probably helped by the fact that she had the Warren Ellis mini backup strip in the first issue, but God, she's so twisted as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell she's
she needs like her own villain, you know, like. She needs to be the villain of someone and be in comics regularly.
She's getting off on it as well, which is just truly creepy.
Yeah.
Then there's this other mystic character as well who is warping the minds of everybody. It's just people who love doing horrible things to each other, trying to out-horrible each other and relishing in it.
That sounds familiar.
And Osborn, all the while, continuously allowing himself to be pounded, pounded, pounded. In another one of those sequences like the previous issue, where it's just pure, not quite to the extent of the previous issue, but red warning lights dousing the page in this crimson tint as all of these, you know, and full props for this, actually drawn blurred effects. No computer
computer wankery here, where they've taken some line art and twisted it to make it look like it's in motion. This is an artist who's actually drawn in the line work.
Can you put that up to the camera?
I can, but I don't think you'll see it very well.
Let me try mine.
My camera is mirrored, so I can't see past the camera.
Focus is screwed up.
Darn it!
You're not moving on my little thumbnail, JD. So. but it's just real hideous stuff, and like he puts him down, and Norman just looks up at him with this Joker grin, and then just takes him down with one go, and it's at that point that everybody realizes who they're fighting. And I fully, this is the fantastic twist of the issue, was like, I just expected them all to shit bricks and back off immediately because, hey, it's the Green Goblin, you know? But no, they all start chanting his name, pulling back their sleeves, revealing goblin tattoos. Norman has just walked right into he has just won the pack over immediately. I'm simultaneously just amazed and horrified, terrified by this single page. And then it's punctuated fantastically by that woman, the doctor, just saying, "Well, there'll be no living with him now." Wow. I'm focusing on all of this, but this is all set alongside the senator. What was her name? I'm going to look that back up. Sandra Muffoletto, the senator who who decided that Osborne would be sent here. We've just seen her at a normal working day and her methodologies and her ways of dealing with situations. But when news of this, the girl, whose name, again, I can't remember any of the names of the characters in this series, which is weird because I'm normally pretty good with that. But Nora Winters, Google reporter, is trying to find out where Norman has gone, and she has made it into the prison and is, in fact, watching the riot as it plays out. And the Bugle intern, who's been set to find out where she has gone, contacts the senator's office. And unfortunately, that just sets off a chain of events where the senator finds out she's been hung out to dry by the other people who made this decision alongside her. So, mm-hmm. As if things weren't bad enough, they're bad on every level here. So this just continues. I mean, I don't know how things could possibly get worse in this comic, but I fully expect them to by the end of this miniseries.
Yeah, I mean, we're only halfway through.
Yeah, this is issue 3 of 5, you know? This is the halfway point.
I've got to say, when this was first announced, I was like, oh, really? Mm. We're gonna do an didn't we just get rid of him? I thought the whole point was, you know.
There's definitely a common sense behind the idea, because Norman's been in the spotlight for a full year, a little bit more with Thunderbolts. So it makes sense to do a story to follow up what happened to him. You know, it's the idea that is really rife with story material. But Osborne, as a mini, it doesn't seem to be selling particularly well. So I guess people felt a little bit burned out on the amount of Osborne. As much sense as it makes to tell this story, I guess people were just feeling a little bit burned out on it, but that is really their loss, because this is like one of three villain-centric miniseries that Marvel are just knocking out, have knocked out recently, which are criminally underrated bits of work, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be looking for Kelly Sue DeConnick's name on future things to check out if the work can be of this standard. And as I've said with Emma Rios, her work has come along and evolved so rapidly. I mean, you can even see this evolving from issue to issue on this miniseries. I first saw her on one issue of Runaways, and then on a Doctor Strange miniseries with Mark Waid. And you'd barely press to tell it was the same. As with the last issue, there's a really great fusion of script and art that is really you would almost feel it with Marvel style, you know, where they give the outline, the artist draws it, and then they put the dialogue in around that. I don't think they do things that way anymore. But, it's a real match, a real pairing that is working better than a lot of, just really leaps out of me how well it's working. So, Osborne is definitely one to keep your eye on.
So you think they're going to wrap it up in 2 issues or not?
It is a 5-issue miniseries. So.
Yeah.
Well, do you think they might continue on with, like, a second one of Osborne?
That's pushing it then, I think. Just not that I wouldn't buy that, because I would have had the same creative team on it, but I just think with Osborn. Well, I suppose we'll see what happens in the next two issues, but the idea of goblin culture and people idolizing Osborn to this extent does not seem like something that can go away mm-hmm. with any degree of haste. So it's entirely possible that, you know, I could see this, like, Osborn gets out and disappears after this, and then he's just off the grid for a while. Maybe he'll come back in a couple of years to terrorize Spider-Man. Or something different may turn out, you know, he may be put back in jail. It's really quite hard to tell, and that is one of the most fun things about it, because it is, that's always one of the best things about a villain-centric miniseries, is that with a hero, you know it's going to turn out all right in the end. They will win. There may be something tragic happen along the way, but as I said, in that case, it is always the journey. You know the hero's going to win in the end, so it's how they win is what you find out. But when you have a villain-centric story, you never know how it is going to turn out for them. It didn't turn out very well for the Taskmaster, in his case.
No. Good. I mean, it was a good series, but QQ for sure at the end.
Yeah, that was not a happy ending in that series. So yeah, that's one of the great things about it.
So are they going to replace that one with another villain miniseries?
No, I don't think they really look at it like that. You know, it'll not end. And they'll say, right, what miniseries can we launch in place of this? You know, I don't think they look at miniseries as like that. Yeah. But certainly, I hope they'll move Kelly Sue DeConnick onto something more high profile. Or just do whatever she does next gets the press, because I think I'll definitely be paying attention to it.
Yeah, and I do really like that this comic is so great, and it does have a female creative team on it. So
that's true. Too. I hadn't even thought of that.
So, I think it's great on its own, and then it's one of those deals where, like, oh yeah, it does have a female creative team. So
do you think that's one reason why it's not doing so well?
No,
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think that plays into it.
I think the problem with it is that it's like a miniseries. I think that, like, for me, like, I should be reading this. I love Spider-Man.
Yes, you should. Yes, you should.
But I'm not reading it, and it's probably because it's a miniseries, and I typically don't buy a miniseries. I typically wait until the miniseries is done, and then I buy a trade of it to see if it was worth, you know, buying the miniseries. There are exceptions, like I bought She-Hulk. You know, I bought every single individual issue of it, but if I'm not buying it, and I'm, like, you know, the person that it's targeted at, then that explains right there. Nobody is really interested in picking
it up.
Well,
I think there was a general sort of reaction to the idea, because people were just a little bit tired of Osborn. But it's an idea with a solid basis behind it, and it's just rather fortunate that it's turned out to be great on top of that.
Yeah, you guys make it sound awesome, and I do regret not getting it, but again, like, you know, Dean Lawson, it's probably going to be, I'll pick it up and trade.
Well, I also got another new miniseries this week. Got a new miniseries here, something new to talk about. I'm going to try and make an effort to talk about something new more regularly. This week, I'm talking about Onslaught Unleashed, the first of a four-issue miniseries coming from Marvel. Every once in a while, Marvel decide they want to bring Onslaught back in some regard.
Yay.
And, okay, so this is basically...
I heard that excitement in you, JD.
Oh, yeah. So this is the thing, I mean, I'll say before I even started into this, I have a bit of a soft spot for Onslaught. It's not, I hold no illusions about it, but it's just that I properly started collecting and reading full series of American Marvel comics with the post-Onslaught Heroes Reborn thing. So I have a soft spot for that era. The hero, whenever they revisit the Heroes Reborn world or Young Allies, this miniseries is a Secret Adventures Young Allies crossover miniseries. Yes, and it's written by Sean McKeever, the author of Young Allies. Now, I talked about Young Allies from time to time on here. I wanted to support that comic. I never saw much of a life in it, frankly. It launched at a bad time, and it just didn't seem to, it had no characters to draw readers to it. And ultimately, as much as I'm a fan of the writer and was drawn to it by the presence of the Heroes Reborn Bucky, I never felt the comic really lived up to its potential. It never was a particularly great title. It just didn't succeed, you know. Its cancellation was not unwarranted. That, however, does not stop me from picking up Sean McKeever's Onslaught Unleashed. And I'll tell you, this is pretty darn good. This is better than any single issue of Young Allies so far. I will absolutely say that. The basic plot here is following on from where Young Allies left off before they hadn't really even become a team. It picks up on a plot thread from there, which is that Toro of the Young Allies was the prisoner of a South American cartel and the subject of genetic experiments down there. And basically, they come to take him back. And he's spirited away to Colombia. But before that happens, Nomad has been having some horrible prophetic visions of this occurrence. And she reports them to Captain America, who decides to call the Secret Avengers in to check them out, you know, because he has faith in her. And basically, the overriding thing about this issue is that this contains better use of the Secret Avengers than any issue yet of the Secret Avengers.
Oh, man.
Wow.
The real question, does it have Max Fury in it?
It doesn't have Max Fury in it.
Well, there you go.
But basically, Captain America is in it because he has his connection to Nomad. She tells him about her dreams. So, Black Widow, the dream contains a rock song, a plant in Colombia, and something called Project Power. So, Black Widow puts her spying skills to use to get inside Roxxon and finds out that Project Power is real. And they truck on down to Colombia, where Moon Knight's mercenary experience helps them get through the jungles down there. Beast's scientific acumen allows them to analyze the machines they found. And Ant-Man's size-changing powers allows him to shrink down and get inside the machine to disable it from the inside out. Every member of the Secret Avengers has some reason or purpose for being in this story, which is much more than can be said for any single passing issue of their own title. Valkyrie's not in this issue. Why? Because there's nothing for her to do.
Nothing for her to fight or anything? I mean, she likes to fight, so...
Yeah, well, they don't have much cause to fight because...
she could hang out in the background and look pretty.
Well, they get there and everybody's dead, so it's not even a scenario where you could put somebody pretty in it. The mysterious reptilian, the reptilian mutate who captured Toro is there. His name is El Dragon, and he is the guy who has decided to take up leadership of this cartel following the death of the man who already ran it, who was in cahoots with Roxxon in this mysterious facility, which is, it turns out, draining energy from the negative zone for purposes as yet unknown. Now, Nomad doesn't take very kindly to the fact that she and the young allies have been left out of this mission, so they get gravity to levitate they all pile into a Datsun and get gravity to use his powers to levitate it down to South America.
Wow.
Yes. And they arrive, they join the Secret Avengers in the facility, and as you may have noticed, the title character has not yet appeared. This is a $4 miniseries, but there is a 8-page backup feature in this, which is the history of Onslaught. It's a saga feature, it's just text and reused art, but it charts the history of Onslaught, and as you'll find out from reading that, guess who was last seen floating around in the negative zone at the end of the terrible Onslaught Reward miniseries from a couple of years back?
The Anti-Monitor?
Yes, that's right.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's the man himself. And out he comes at the end of the issue. And more to the point, possesses Nomad's body.
So Onslaught's no longer Professor X, right? I mean, I have no idea.
He was separated from Professor X.
So he is his own thing now, whatever he is.
Before the end of Onslaught itself. He was recreated whenever the Scarlet Witch said no more mutants. He was recreated from the energies that were released. Professor X and Magneto both lost their powers in that. So their energies combined to recreate Onslaught for the Onslaught Reborn miniseries, which is about... Which that was like 5 years ago nearly now at this point, but that was a really bad miniseries. It was a real Jeff Loeb wrote it. But there is
Jeff Loeb
quite good.
But one thing about Onslaught, wasn't he created by Mark Waid? Wasn't that when Mark Waid was doing X-Men?
Mark Waid certainly had some hand in it. I don't know. I don't really think you could say Onslaught was created by any one guy, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Like committee. But this is, you know, really, really quite good. This is the Sean McKeever that I remember from Sentinel and the other earlier projects of his that I enjoyed, you know. It is I'm simply overwhelmed by the fact that this is better use of the Secret Avengers than their own comic is managing. And Moon Knight, the single most overlooked character in Secret Avengers, who might finally be getting something to do in the next issue of that book, is great in this. Because he knows the South American jungles. But the fact is as well, because of his connection to spirituality and everything down there, he knows there's something wrong in the air. He's hearing things. It's very Lost-esque. He's hearing whispers in the jungle. He knows something is wrong with the forces that are at work in the jungle. And there's some very... I haven't even touched on the art in this here. The art is by Philip Andrade, who I don't know. But if I had to compare it to something, I would compare it to G.I. Joe Renegades. But not in the bad way.
Define the bad way.
Well, I think G.I. Joe Renegades is a kind of an ugly cartoon, frankly. I think that I don't remember the name of the character designer from Renegade. I don't think his work translated into animation models very well, but I do enjoy the actual drawn artwork I've seen from him, and this definitely brings it to mind for me. There's it's a touch of that unusual European, European or Latin American sort of style to the artwork here that is pretty. I don't think there's really any other mainstream comics you find that are looking like this. There's a great panel here, this is just why I reminded it was when Moon Knight is caught in an explosion and he shields the Black Widow, and it's just a whole horizontal, maybe about a third of a page, a panel of orange fire, and just this dagger of silver and black cut through the fire as it washes around his cape. Let me see if I can hold it up for you. There it is.
Wow.
It is rather nice on all fronts, and it's better than any single issue of Young Allies. It employs its cast better than one of the two books that involved in the crossover is. It's got nice art, and it's by an author whose work I have traditionally enjoyed, even if it is bringing back a kind of a hokey villain who represents a bad period of Marvel history. The book winds up being more than some of its parts. On paper, Young Allies, disappointing book, Secret Avengers, book that hasn't lived up to its potential, villain somebody from a shit 1990s crossover, shouldn't add up to make a decent read. Funnily enough, it does. So, it's my recommendation for this week.
Nice. Cool. Very good. And that takes us to our last review, then.
Yes, it does.
So, McFeely, if you would do the honors.
It's Amazing Spider-Man.
Yay!
So, Amazing Spider-Man number issue 654, the third and final third and final part of the Revenge of the Spider Slayer storyline. In which Spidey and the New Avengers are still trying to fend off the multiple attacks from Alistair Smythe and his legions of insect mutates who are out for revenge by killing everybody near and dear to Jonah Jameson. Now, who remembers last issue's exciting cliffhanger?
Me.
Yeah, me.
Yeah.
Where Modell
cornered Peter Parker and said, "We have to have a talk about you and Spider-Man." Oh, goodness gracious, he's found out he's Spider-Man.
I mean, the dude's a genius. He works at a think tank. He should be able to figure it out, right?
I'm
right?
Disappointed.
Well,
no, he didn't figure it out.
Turns out that he just believes Peter builds Spider-Man's gear.
Do you think that's a lie? That's a lot like Batman Inc., I thought, when I first read that.
Do you think that's smoke and mirrors, though? Do you think that's Max not wanting to play his full hand?
Possibly, but Max doesn't seem like the kind of guy to play anything too close to his chest. He does say it strains credulity to think one could possess both amazing spider powers and the scientific acumen to live to invent devices like web shooters.
You got me, Max. Frankly, I'm relieved finally has somebody to combine in. That's all.
Yeah. But then it's pretty cool the way Max then just helps him build the spider signal jammer that he needs, because he's found out that all of Smythe's insect mutates have a derivative of his spider sense. So he builds a jammer to take care of it. Now, I think we need to say before we get to the end, and this was a bit of a surprise to me, someone dies in this issue.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know there was a death on the horizon, but I think this might have been foreshadowed to some extent. Pardon me. because there are a couple of fake-outs here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the aforementioned customer who really loves Spider-Man had been anticipating a death, and I wasn't sure if he was just guessing that or if he'd read something about it. Because we got Jonas Sr. clutching his arm here. I'm like, damn, what's going on there? You know, I think, you know, that might be about the only fake. You know, but then it seems like maybe Randy Robertson's going to die whenever Phil Urich collapses a pillar on top of him.
Yeah,
well.
Dude, mm-hmm. Why is he not street pizza? I mean, he should be smashed or something, shouldn't he?
He's got his eggs.
Yeah, just his
legs. Yeah, but the way that fell, it just looks like it should have squashed him, but it didn't.
Got him. There's a couple fake outs in there, but I wasn't sure what it was building to at all. There's a great bit where Marla, Jonah's husband, she because nobody remembers who she is.
Jonah's wife.
You're probably yeah. Yes, quite right. That's a different comic. Nobody ever remembers that she actually built spider slayers for Jonah back in Amazing Spider-Man 167, you know, only 500 issues ago.
God, I didn't remember. I had no idea.
So she uses her own knowledge to help build something that will scramble them so that to help the Avengers in the fight. And that was really cool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scorpion continues to be really entertaining. So he comes plummeting out of Smythe's ship, just dropping down towards Spidey, and he just roars, you know, "Hi, bug! You miss me?"
We're not on a rocket anymore. You can stop shouting. He said, sure did. I mean, it's literally been minutes since I've met the new Scorpion. That's awesome.
There's a lot of extended fight sequences in which we have a couple of fake outs that Spidey's forced to trigger the signal jammer after the Scorpion destroys the remote device he was going to use. He has to trigger it up close and personal, and it scrambles his own spider sense. With the indication that he's actually lost it for good.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, crap, that's big. What's going on here?
That never happens.
The laughing spider really does is that he gets belted in the head by a piece of debris he doesn't see coming and gets a concussion. So, unfortunately, he cannot move to act whenever the spider slayer sends his pincers flying towards Jonah and Marla pushes him out of the way and gets stabbed through the chest.
Oh no!
And it is Marla who dies this issue.
Holy crap!
I did not see this coming because I didn't know. I mean, that's the third comic this week that ended with somebody clutching somebody else who was dying.
What? Now, why did you think they didn't play up the death of her?
She's not a superhero.
Shocking, really? Yeah, well, that's true too. You know, whenever somebody's not a superhero, it doesn't mean as much when they die, but whenever you don't know it's coming, it's always the more shocking thing. And the wonderful thing about this as well is the fact that, you know, the last thing she says to them is, don't be mad, don't blame anyone for this, don't blame the Spider Slayers or Spider-Man, don't blame Smythe, don't waste any more of your life on hate.
Yeah.
And she dies. But Jonah knows that the whole thing is his fault. It is his fault, and Jonah's not going to come out of this one easy. I don't even know what's going to happen next, because Jonah is a great character. There's a reason Jonah has stuck around as long as he has. Sometimes you can just play Jonah as a caricature, but some of the single best Jonah moments are the times when Jonah is a genuine, honest newsman. Or just a real person instead of a J.K. Simmons caricature of the Spider-Man hating, you know, funny man. And this is going to be bad. I don't know what's going to happen with Jonah next, and I'm just really looking forward to finding out, frankly.
It's going
to
make good story, though.
Definitely.
It's going to be good story, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the sort of character that you can safely kill off, not have everybody go, oh, wonder when she'll be back, because, you know, who even knows who Marla Madison is, and yet produce a great story from doing so as well. And there's no shock value, big hypo attention here because they didn't play this up. This is a story idea. You know, this mm-hmm. is what this is. And,
Are you saying you liked how they did her death better than Johnny Storm's?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Well, because you got a main character, and I mean, it was hyped up for weeks about the Fantastic Four. Or would you rather have that hype, or whether would you rather have something like this that actually takes you by surprise?
Yeah, I'd rather have
it. I like the surprise, but I think that if I had been presented with the issue of Fantastic Four as written and drawn, not knowing what it contained, no hype, I wouldn't have believed Johnny was dead in it. Mm. Whereas I really believe Marla is dead in this.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
The way the story is staged in Fantastic Four, you don't even see the body, you know?
Is that a superhero thing? I mean, because like this is a person, you know, people can die, but in our minds, superheroes always come back. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't think saying somebody will die in this Spider-Man was really going to sell more comics, because Spider-Man is the only. You know, Spider-Man is his own headliner. So if somebody dies in a Spider-Man comic, it is just a member of his human supporting cast. It's never a member of the Avengers or of the Fantastic Four or of a team that allows you to believe somebody important may actually die. Not to demean Marla's contribution to this story. But it's really weird that I didn't even see it coming, because like Marla never appears and never does anything, and then she springs out of nowhere in the last couple of issues to play this important role in getting all this set up for Peter, and yet it didn't even cross my mind that this is where Slott was going with it, you know?
Well, they had really kind of pushed her out of the scene anyway, because back when Jonah's, his situation with the Daily Bugle, you know, she left him. She basically just left him, and the whole situation where he lost the Bugle and the other guy came in and took it from him. She's the one that gave it to him. She's the one that Jonah had a heart attack, I think, is what was happening in the story.
Yeah, and she sold the Bugle because
she decided that the Bugle is what was doing it to him. That's what was killing him. So she got rid of it and then she left him. And then
I don't think a lot of authors really knew what to do with her. Because it's always weird. It's hard, I think, to write or even to really conceive of Jonah Jameson as a married man outside of using, the way the movies did, using Mrs. Jameson as, the unseen Vera Peterson-type character who just henpecks from afar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Marla is actually quite a hot young woman. And it's like, how the hell did Jonah score that? It's another part of it. She's quite young. She's a good bit younger than Jonah.
Maybe she's into Hitler or something.
Sorry. She's actually been drawn with quite a full mustache, now that you mention it. definitely solid stuff. It makes me really interested to see what happens next. But I mean, that's not even the most, it probably is the most interesting thing in the issue, but it's not the hyped point of the issue. The hyped point of this issue is that the backup strip in this issue gives us our first look at the new Venom, who is getting his ongoing series next month. We weren't supposed to know who Venom was before this one, but it did
actually.
We
weren't supposed to know until the .1 issue, weren't we? Because that's what I heard.
No, the idea was that this one would tell us who it was, and then the next one would be him in action for the first time. But it leaked. I don't know. Did you guys know before you read this who the new Venom was? Or?
No, I
knew. It got spoiled for me.
Yeah.
I don't get spoiled for this.
It didn't really affect me that much. I mean, it affected me in the way that really it's him. But other than that, it's still I'm kind of fine. You know.
They don't beat around it at all, because he's there on the first page. Hey, folks, it's Flash Thompson. Flash Thompson is the new Venom.
Yeah.
Flash Thompson, who has no legs because he came back from the war.
That was a great story, too. Unfortunately, the sad thing about Flash is that the only way writers seem capable of wringing good stories out of Flash is to do terrible things to him.
Yeah.
like they put him through the ringer as an alcoholic and had a breakup with Betty back in the day, or which was gallingly discarded by Mackie and Byrne whenever they rebooted back around 2000. Or in this case, he has lost his legs in the war. But even more to the point, then, that makes the idea of him becoming the new Venom so much more interesting, because he has so much to gain from this. The symbiote gives him legs.
Yeah.
You know,
just to think about it like this, okay, like he idolizes Spider-Man.
Mm.
He's becoming Spider-Man now, basically.
Now, this comes out in April?
March.
March, next month, okay.
Yeah. Mm. This is his chance to be Spider-Man. This is something he has longed for all his life, basically.
Yeah.
But there is a catch to all of this. That this can't be permanent, because the longer he stays with the symbiote, the more chance there is of it forming a permanent bond to him. So he and the symbiote are actively separated for periods of time when they're not on mission.
Yeah.
And he can only do it for, what was it, like a dozen or 10 or 20 times before...
Yeah, how many regenerations?
To the next grunt.
Like that. Yeah.
But this issue is just all introducing. I mean, it does kind of read a bit like a file card, where it's like you have this gun, and here's your guns, and here's the gas pellets, and your symbiote can do this. It is just a rundown of the abilities Flash is sporting. But it is very much. It just here's the this is what the series is about. You know, you can go into it fresh now. He's working for the government. He can only do it a certain amount of times. It's a bit Suicide Squad-y.
Yeah.
It's your last chance to do good off the radar, for bad to do good. And you may not come back. Because the twist at the end of it is, he is the second guy to be the new Venom. Because the scrambler device that they've got to separate him from the symbiote fried the brain of the last guy that they used it on.
Yeah.
The Flash is willing to make any sacrifice. We meet who are sure to be the supporting cast of the new series, and just get introduced to the general hook of the thing, which probably would have been a little bit better if it hadn't been blown ahead of time. But JD, you managed to avoid spoilers for that.
I know, of course. I don't get spoiled for this, and I get spoiled for Fantastic Four. So. and I don't really care about Flash Thompson, but I liked this. I might even read it. I don't know.
I went from not giving a damn about this new Venom series to, like, in a second reading this, thinking, maybe I'm going to pick this up now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they did something right, because they've got me... I mean, because, like, I really like Flash. I mean, I hate to say it, but I really like Flash since he lost his legs. I hate to say that.
It sounds horrible, but it's true.
Yeah, but he had some good stories. The Brand New Day stuff's been really good with him, and they've done some good stuff with it. And I think they've said that, like, Dan Slott's, like, sort of been working with this too, so it's not like this writer, what is his name, is just kind of doing it.
Well, Slott wrote this, but Rick Remender is writing the actual series.
Yeah, so they were kind of working together to kind of go in this direction or something, and that just kind of makes me want to read it even more, because then it'd be kind of like getting another sort of Amazing Spider-Man type stuff going on.
Well, now do you think
Sure.
Oh, I was just going to – do you think that someone that doesn't know Flash's history will be able to understand this series?
I think so. I think it works with the general just G.I. Joe as Venom sort of theme. I don't think you need to know Flash Thompson, but anybody who's seen the Spider-Man movies will know the name, I think.
Though he wasn't in the movie that much.
Well, he was in the first one, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people speculated it was going to be Flash. But
I think we had even speculated on the show a couple weeks ago. But
well, we didn't really speculate too much about it. Yeah. We haven't really talked too much about it.
Yeah. I didn't even think Flash Thompson. That was, like, the furthest thing from my mind. I was like, I didn't even think about anybody. Really, honestly, Venom's gotten to the point where I care so little about that character that I didn't care. It's like it could have been, like, Aunt May, and I wouldn't have cared.
You know? Oh. I'm trying to imagine that. Aunt May, American Soldier,
so I'm
and
not,
Fortune.
So I'm not wanting to read the Venom book for Venom. I'm wanting to read the book for Flash Thompson.
Yeah.
I would read it if it was Aunt May as Venom. Oh my gosh, that would be awesome.
I wanna that's what I'm saying. Aunt May, there you go, Dan Flott. There's your next
future what if story. There you go.
Yes.
Dan Flott
can Aunt May became Venom soldier.
She needs to become a superhero. That'd be awesome. Or a supervillain, yeah.
Can I just say as well that this letter from, Ben Mulder on the letters page this issue, just the tears of nerd rage sustain me. Yes, delicious.
Apparently.
I can't believe you killed Roderick Kingsley. I'm
oh, geez.
You, I didn't even read that. That's delicious. Come on now. Hobgoblin's way more interesting now than he's been in like 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. And relevant. Yeah. So, awesome. Well, hey, that's the review part of the show. And that's what we do here on Fanboys Versus, as we've done for a whole year.
Woo!
Yay!
Of episodes. again, I want to thank our partners over at Comic News International. That's comicnewseye.com, where they're reposting our shows and everything. And of course, I want to thank all of you. And I tried to get Ender on the show. I guess he was busy. He couldn't be on. Tried to get Brian on, and he said no. Not really. He just had other stuff. But anyway.
Brian, why don't you love us? Really? Come on.
I think it's been a great year. I think the show has come a long way in a year. Apparently, this show has to be 2 hours long when I host it.
News this week and an extra person reviewing stuff.
So. Yeah. You know. So, but it's fun and people seem to like it. I don't have people yelling at me because it's 2 hours. Other than us.
Well, we haven't hit 2.5. You know, I think we've hit a nice sort of normal length of what we have going this week.
Yeah, it's good.
And when we got good comics, we like to talk about them. When we got bad comics, we'll make this show shorter.
Yes.
Yep.
So links will vary based on how good the comics are. So don't blame us. Blame the writers and creators of the comics. Exactly. So speaking of writers and creators for comics, I wasn't able to get this done ahead of time. As I had announced sort of preemptively yesterday and have talked about earlier in this show, we have lined up our first Fanboy Versus interview. So we're going to be doing that tomorrow. I don't know how to say it other than to say that we're going to interview Dan Juergens. Booster Gold, and he killed Superman, which is a big plus for me.
He wrote the greatest run on Thor that was ever conceived. Oh, my God.
So you're saying that he's a superhero because he killed us, Superman.
He not only did he kill Superman, but he created Booster Gold. And those two things make me think that he's awesome. So so we're going to be talking to Dan tomorrow. If you have questions or anything, email them to me at jd@tfradio.net, and we'll try and get some of those in as much as we can. So. Hopefully we'll get that up and posted tomorrow, if not tomorrow, Tuesday, for sure. So really exciting. I'm beside myself about that. It's so awesome that he's going to talk to us and do that interview. So
Are you going to do a squeal? Are you going to do a fanboy squeal?
I might actually do a full on man squee.
Yay!
so I'm going to try not to, but...
Do it for the show, JD.
Do it for the show. Man squee for the show. So we're going to do that tomorrow. So awesome. I'm pretty excited about that. Also, I want to point out that I've started to do a YouTube video series that I'm calling the Fanboy Versus Sparring Edition, where I'm going to be reviewing, and you all are welcome to do them as well. But they're basically going to be reviews of comics that we didn't get to on the show. But things that I still want to talk about. They're only like 5-10 minutes, so they're not very long. But just sort of reviews for things that we didn't get to touch on or things that we didn't have time to do on the show, but that I still want to talk about and things. So check that out. Again, that's going to be on YouTube under the RFC channel, Fanboy Versus Sparring Edition. My first video is up, which was my review of Time Masters from 2 weeks ago, I guess. So, yeah. So, anyway, anything else that anybody else wanted to add before we're getting out of here?
No, I think that's it. We're good for this week, I think.
So, awesome. Well, hey, everybody. Again, thanks for joining all of you out there. Thanks for joining us for the past year and making it great. And I want to thank all of you, of course, for contributing and being here every week and when there isn't a Super Bowl. And
hey, so, thanks, course, for bringing me on for the, you know, so I could be part of the celebration.
Yeah, you know. You're here like for three.
I know. I'm just like, I think it's funny you guys announced the second week you announce that I'm an official co-host, and then the next week I don't even show up.
I wasn't here, so you know.
I'm getting better. Stick with me.
Doing good. So, all right. Well, hey, everybody, again, thanks for joining us, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.